I'm Smriti Bhagat from Rutgers. Okay. And this work is with Graham Cormord, the privacy guru Bala, and Divesh from AT&T Labs. So I think the stage is set very well for me. The previous talk in the session was on privacy and then on data sharing. So I'm going to jump right into it. So we all know social networks have a lot of information about us. And a lot of this information can be considered private or sensitive. For instance, people share their cell phone numbers on OSNs, which is not even available from a 411 service or any other way. If you Google a person, you can't find the cell phone number. You go to Facebook, you'll find it. Recently, you can also share information about your siblings, your relationships, your parents. So anybody who used your mother's maiden name as a security question, it's no longer private, so be careful about that. But thankfully, not all of this information is publicly available. Not all of it can be crawled, as we just saw. And users now have the option to choose what part of this information is visible to friends, what is visible to everyone, what is visible to Google and search engines and so on. Now, consider a typical profile there. There is information not just about you, but also about how you interact with people on the OSN. And as researchers, we would like to get access to all of this data. Now, whether we crawl it or we're given it is the next question, but it would be wonderful to get access to this data to study the communication pattern between users. And not just that, but we want to study this over a period of time and see how this evolves. It's not just us who wants this data. Even the OSNs are eager to share this data to make their services better, and not just what they serve us over the OSN, but to share it with advertisers and to share it with recommendation systems, like the recent thing about Facebook sharing information with Yelp and Pandora to make recommendations for those services better for us. So, while we want access to all of this data, OSNs have this responsibility on how they can share this data with us. Now, traditionally, there has been a lot of study on data sharing in databases where the community has come up with this technology called anonymization of data, where the data from the social network, in this case, is published on and made available to whoever wants it, provided that it's the privacy of users is not revealed using that, and the data should still be usable for analysis by researchers. Now, consider a simple example here. On the left, you see a set of profiles of users, and in the center is a graph representing the social network. So in this graph, each node represents a user of the network with some attributes about the user. Here, it's the age, gender, and location of the person. And an edge between two users is, for now, just a friendship link, although it can represent any sort of an interaction between two users. For instance, a message, a wall post, or so on. And on the right is an anonymized version of the graph, a very simple anonymization where I strip out the username of the person and I replace it with an arbitrary identifier. For instance, Alex here is one. So given that graph, let's assume this is anonymized. Now clearly it's very easy to break such an anonymization. For instance, if you knew that Heather is in New York, then you can uniquely identify that node 8 is Heather. Not just that, if you knew that Heather has two friends and say node 8 was the only one that had two friends, then you can find out who Heather is in the graph. So this is a simple way of anonymization, which of course doesn't work. And more recently, a lot more sophisticated schemes have been proposed. There are two types of approaches that within social network data people have used. The first one is when you anonymize the network by making neighborhoods similar. So that involves introducing edges or removing edges from the graph to make similar neighborhoods. For instance, if you have, you can make K nodes in the entire graph have degree 5. So you will not be able to identify, and not just the degree of that node, but the degree of the neighbors of that node as well. However, that involves introducing and removing edges and changing the graph structure. So that's not very, that's not something great for analysis. You're modifying the graph completely, and that may lead to very different query answers. So another set of approaches that have been proposed is when you hide the user to node mapping. So you group users together, and you publish information about those groups so that you don't know which exact node is that user. So we'll focus on that set of approaches, and I'll give you more details in a couple of slides. But what I want to mention is that most of the approaches, in fact, all of them that have been proposed so far, focus on just publishing one single network, instance of the network. So you're given the network state right now, you anonymize it and publish it. But we all know social networks are highly dynamic, and communication and interactions are changing by the second. So you want to be able to publish these updates to the social network for researchers to do temporal analysis on that. And that is exactly what the focus of this work is. In this particular work, what we want to do is do dynamic social network anonymization, where we publish the graph at one time instance and constantly publish updates to the graph. While we're doing this, we want to do so privately so that we're not revealing the identity of users. So graph published 10 timestamps later should not reveal the identity of users that was published in the first timestamp. The main things that we will focus on in this particular talk is, first, we've identified this problem, and we'll define the privacy requirements for dynamic anonymization. And we'll propose a scheme that's based on link prediction for anonymizing the graph. And further, we'll propose metrics for evaluating the privacy loss as newer instances are published. And we evaluate our work on three social network or aggregate networks: Facebook, Flickr, and FriendFeed. Okay, so what is the dynamic anonymization problem? So given a graph, a series of graphs, G0 to GT, where a graph at any time stamp T is a set of nodes that represent users, and edges between those nodes that are friendships. Now, the first picture here in the center is the graph at time T0. The graph at time T1 is just the same graph that was, with new nodes and edges added. So the red nodes are the new ones, and there are three types of edges that are between nodes that existed at time T0, node between a new node and an existing node, and between two new nodes. And for now, we just want to know that the edges between nodes that existed at time T0 are the ones that are important for our privacy, and we'll get to that in a minute. So given all of that input, a series of graphs, what we want to do is publish a series of anonymized graphs. That's G0 prime to GT prime. And we want the graphs that we publish to have certain properties. Now, we want privacy properties of that graph, not just in terms of the identity of nodes, but also the identity of edges. So more specifically, what we want is that given any graph at time t, I want to be the probability of identifying a node to a user is less than some threshold 1 over k. And I want that the probability of identifying an edge or an interaction between two users is also less than 1 over k for any timestamp t. I also want this graph to be usable. So I want to be able to answer queries exactly or with high accuracy for the graph at time t. Those queries could be of the kind that I just want graph properties. So I may want to ask, what is the clustering coefficient of this graph at time t, which is just the property of the graph, or it may be more on the interactions between users. So I may want to know how many users from California interact with other users from California at time t. not just at time t, I want to know this over a period of time. So I want to know between now and a year ago, how many users continue to interact with each other. And if I have just one graph, then this problem reduces to that of anonymizing static networks. And we'll just very quickly look at how people have used anonymization for publishing a single instance of the network. So on the left, you have a graph, G. And the main idea of anonymizing this graph is to say that instead of publishing a user ID with each node, I'll publish a list of user IDs with each node. So let's say K is the parameter, where K is the length of the list. I group users together into groups of size K and publish with each node a list of user IDs, where the node, the list has the actual ID of the user. And it's not just sufficient to publish arbitrary lists because they may leak information. What one wants to do is to be very careful in how these nodes are being grouped together. So a condition that we do mandate is that the interaction between users of two groups should be sparse. And why that is so is, if you look at the picture on the right, you have two nodes on the that are labeled 1, 1, 2, the list 1, 2, and two nodes on the right that are labeled 3, 4. Now in this particular example, even without knowing which node is 1 and which node is 2, you know that node 1 interacts with node 3, and you know node 2 interacts with node 4, and so on, and that breaches the edge privacy. So we want to mandate that no node interacts with more than one node in any group. And with this, once we've computed these lists, one can publish the entire graph structure. So queries asked on this graph are answered exactly when the queries involve just the graph properties. And we have this scheme has provable guarantees as to on the privacy of on the provable privacy guarantees of 1/k. Okay, so what if we take this approach and apply it to dynamic anonymization? So I take the graph, I anonymize it. I take the graph at timestamp, the next timestamp, and anonymize it using the same approach. Now notice that it's not sufficient to do that if I individually anonymize, because the label, the list at any given node may change. And for instance, node 10 here on the right was labeled 3 and 10 in the previous anonymization. Now it's labeled 5 and 10, so one knows that that's node 10. And we've breached the privacy of that particular user. So the lesson learned is that we must preserve the initial anonymization. So what we do at time zero is very important, and we want to preserve that anonymization as we go along to publish new graphs. Okay, so another approach is, which we'll refer to as the naive approach. It says that what you do at time zero, maintain that, and as you get new nodes and edges, just add them to the graph. And again, if an edge appeared between the nodes that were labeled 3 and 10, then one has breached the edge privacy, which says that, oh, 3 and 10 interact with each other. So one has to be very careful on how one groups these nodes and what lists are published with each node to maintain the privacy of users as new edges appear. And notice that the way the privacy is breached here is because the number of interactions between a group is now increased, so the sparsity is no longer there. So our solution to that is to predict edges. While we don't know how the network is going to evolve, we can use the link prediction techniques, which have now become fairly, they're very good in predicting links. And in particular, we've looked at, among the many techniques, three three that I'll discuss in this talk. There are, the first one is a friend of a friend. If I'm your friend and you have another friend, then I'm likely to know that person. And then there are weighted versions of this, which are which is a common neighbor, and which is just weighting by the number of common neighbors, and Adamic Adar, which is the weight is a function of the number of common neighbors. However, it's not just simple to just use all of these predicted links into our anonymization techniques, because typically these link prediction techniques overpredict edges. So in our example of a Facebook graph, there are 54,000 nodes, and a friend of a friend prediction predicts 42 million nodes, while only 500,000 of these actually appear within a year. So one wants to be able to prioritize these edges as to which ones we want to pick to include in our graph that we want to now anonymize. And we came up with three techniques. One simple technique is to say, okay, I'll take the top most weighted edges and I'll take include them in the graph. That doesn't work very well, because what you're doing is just, you may end up picking a lot of edges for some nodes and no edges for some other nodes because their weight was small. What you could do is then say, okay, I'm just gonna look at each node and pick the top edges, weighted edges for that node. Well, again, that doesn't work because social networks don't evolve uniformly. Not everybody adds 10 links a day. So one wants to do is to be able to, okay, so what we did was we looked at the degree distribution of our the data sets that we had. On the right is a picture where the x-axis shows the current degree of, the degree at time t0 of Facebook users, and on the y-axis is the degree at time t1. And one realizes that the degree is, the number of edges added or links created is sort of proportional to the degree, some function of the degree. So the third method that we have is the adaptive local method, which says that, okay, I'm gonna add, choose the predicted edges based on the degree of each node. And the way we incorporate these link edges, the predicted edges into the anonymization scheme is that take the graph, add in all these chosen or prioritized edges into the graph, and now do the grouping. Now the grouping must satisfy some conditions. So it's not sufficient, two nodes cannot be placed into the group if they have a common neighbor. So the first picture here, 1 and 2 have a common neighbor 3. They're likely to be in the future interact with each other, and that'll reduce the sparsity of our grouping. So we're gonna not allow such groupings to exist in our published graph. We don't want to allow even a grouping where there is one predicted edge and one real edge between. So what we can allow is when there are just predicted edges between between two users, and or maybe no edges. So two nodes, U1 and U2, are grouped together only if there are no paths of length 2 or lesser that have at least one predicted edge. And once we've done that, we can now find a grouping that satisfies this condition and publish our graph. The graph is now the graph that was published at the previous timestamp, plus these new the new nodes that appear and grouped and anonymized in that way. So this output has some properties. Although we cannot guarantee, but we empirically show that using link prediction preempts any privacy loss due to addition of new edges. And we'll show that empirically in the next slide. And the utility achieved in asking queries on this graph is also high. And again, we'll show that in the experiments. So how do we know that this graph that we are publishing actually preserves the privacy of users? So we've published a graph at time t0, at t1, and t2, and so on, but we want to know how bad is it, how much privacy is leaked. So for that, we propose a metric for privacy loss called the edge identification, which is really just the density of edges between a group, pairs of groups. So group S1 and S2 have, so in the picture on the right, you have two groups. The first one is 1, 2, and then the other group is 3, 4 on the right. And the number of edges between these two groups is just 1, while there are 4 nodes, so 4 possible edges between them. And hence the EI, or the edge identification metric, is 1/4, which is just the probability with which an attacker can find that there is an edge between two nodes in that group. And now that's the metric for two groups. The metric, when applied to the graph, translates to how many such groups exist that have an EI value of alpha, say. So in this graph, what we show is that we've evaluated this metric for anonymizing 2 timestamps T0 and T1 for the Facebook data. It's the New Orleans collection of Facebook users. There are 54,000 nodes, about less than 1 million edges, and it was collected between Jan 08 and Jan 09. So the x-axis here shows the alpha threshold for the EI values, and the y-axis is the percentage improvement when using prediction over not using prediction, so the naive approach that we mentioned earlier. And the 3 lines in this graph are the 3 prediction models that we've used. So notice that within, with just the friend of a friend approach, you can get about 90% improvement in the EI when you use prediction, link prediction. Okay, and this slide shows how we perform when we publish multiple instances of the graph. So on the x-axis here is 6 timestamps for the friend feed data. It's 99,000 nodes, about 1.5 million edges, and it's collected over a period of 7 months. So the y-axis here is the absolute EI values, and the lines show for 2 different alpha settings what is the improvement with using the friend-of-a-friend approach as compared to no prediction. And as you can see, this is consistently better for both alpha values, and we've tested for some other values as well. Using prediction is always better. Also notice that the red line starts only in February, which really means that the density of edges between between pairs of groups became, say, that there were no groups with more than 4 edges between them, where group sizes 10 here, for the friend feed data set when using prediction. So even after adding 1 million edges, there were no groups with more than 4 edges between them, while 100 edges would mean like total loss of privacy. Okay, and finally, a word on how does this perform when I want to use these published graphs for answering queries, and I want those queries to be accurate, so how does this perform on the utility? So the graph here shows when I ask a query, which is how many Facebook users between age 15 and 20 interact with other users between age 20 and 30 between these 2 timestamps of Facebook that I have. And the graph shows the error in the query answering for the 2 timestamps, where the first bar is the one without prediction, and the following 3 are the ones with prediction. And as you can see, there's only about a 3% increase in the error, which is insignificant. So in conclusion, yes, we can now publish data, multiple instances of the data when we use link prediction. Of course, the accuracy and the privacy guarantees would really depend on how well the link prediction methods work for the particular data set. We've proposed some new metrics. I mentioned just one in the talk. There are more in the paper for evaluating privacy loss when this data is published over a period of time. And our experiments show that significant improvement in privacy without any loss of utility. Well, thank you. questions.
This is probably a dumb question, but I was just curious, do you have some sense of how many people really want access to this type of data? I'm just curious, it's really systems-y type question, but like, is it possible that it could be in the hundreds and so it's easy to screen the people who want access to this kind of data? So just a really simple question.
Well, I know at least all of us in this room want access to the data. Well, and not just us, it's the advertisers, it's Yelp, it's Pandora, it's a lot of services who would want access to this data. And I think it's hard to say that, okay, I trust Pandora and I'll give it to Pandora, but then you don't know who all is really accessing the data and they will not distribute it further.
I think if you look at other areas, you'll see that the availability of any kind of real data suddenly escalates the activity and the progress. So it's really cool. Is there another question?
Is it your technique depending on the time frame that you use? If I change windows, so you anonymize the graph using a Windows large L, and I use a Windows large double L. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I'm inserting particular structure in the graph. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, you will insert this particular structure. Let's think a chain, okay? Mm-hmm. At some point, you will insert this structure. So at that point, because I'm using a longer Windows, I'll be able to identify a particular user. Is mm-hmm. it? So the answer is your technique depending on the length, window length that you're using, or it's independent?
Okay, so I think there are two parts of your question. The first one is that, is it dependent on the window length? Well, in some sense, yes, because we do want enough number of users to be added in the next timestamp. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just add two users and their privacy be leaked.
Right.
So you do want to have sufficiently large new data, new update that you release the information.
Okay.
And the other part of your question said that what if I introduce a certain structure in the graph? Now, certainly, if you introduce some structure in the graph, you may be and will be able to identify that particular structure. But then because of the way the privacy guarantees of the approach, you will be able to only identify that structure and maybe some other nodes that you link to or other nodes in that particular group, but no more than that. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of limited to what you've inserted and what you identify.
Yeah, I see as a slowdown, but as soon as I identify something in the graph, there are some techniques that allow me to spread around and identify more.
Well, it's because of the way the static approach is that if you have, say, 10 users in a group, you've identified one user, then the privacy of the 9 other users is still preserved. So it has that guarantee that if you've, they're K users, then K minus 1 still have their identity preserved.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.
I had a question about why it is that link prediction doesn't actually harm the way that you can preserve the privacy of the nodes. For example, I might predict that nodes in California are more likely to know each other. So if I have these multiple IDs on each node, I might look for the IDs that all match on a given attribute. Why is that not something that you could do if you were to release this data?
So what that would really do, because these nodes have the same, are likely to be likely to be linking together in the future, then what this method would do is put them in separate groups. So they will not be in the same group, which means that you have a large diversity within the group, and then it's harder to know which node is what.
So the group might be diverse, right? So I'll have, you know, California, New York, and so on, but then all I need to do, I would think, is look at the neighbors, and which will again be diverse, and see which of those diverse attributes match. So it would seem that it would be easier to disambiguate, the more diverse the group is?
Well, okay, I think it's both ways. It really depends on what sort of background information you have and what can you decipher from that information. So a computer would not be able to know this. As a human being, we do have some extra background information saying that, oh, you know, people from opposite genders are more likely to link to each other, or people from California are more likely to link to each other, and so on. And I think even if you do that, you may be able to identify some part of the graph, but I don't think, because of the guarantees, you will not be able to cascade that information through the graph. So yes, you may be able to identify maybe yourself and maybe some other neighbors or links between a few nodes.
This is not an absolute guarantee by any measure. It's just a trade-off between the utility. Because you can have absolute guarantee, totally anonymized. You just won't be able to run any queries to get any value. Thank you.